This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Media Splode, episode 28, the top 5 TV deaths. Fanboy Media Split, episode 28. My name is Connor Gilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
And Ron Richards.
Hello, my friends.
And we're here because of the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy who unlock the Media Split show. It's our monthly non-comics media discussion show. And we'd like to talk about things that aren't comic books, aside from our regular Pick of the Week show and other comic book shows that we do at ifanboy.com. And there'll be spoilers, especially this episode. There's going to be some serious spoilers. We'll get to that.
Good point.
In the main section, the main discussion bit, but there's going to be we're going to spoil a lot of stuff.
Just a lot. I mean, as spoiled as eggs and
like not maliciously. Like
no,
maliciously,
but I was doing research for the segment, and I was like, I'm going to spoil myself here, looking up like famous TV deaths.
That's a problem.
Yeah, and the thing is, we can't cover you here, so we're sorry. So it's not even like, hey, we're talking about this TV show, and you can choose not to listen. Like, you're going to be surprised with what you're spoiled by.
Yeah, so we're going to get to that segment in the segment itself because there's a lot of preamble for that one. So, but we like to start off the show as we do every month, talking about what it is we've been watching since we last talked. It's been a while. I think we did this show early July last time, so it's probably been about 6 weeks since we last did this show.
It has
a lot to talk about. Who wants to start?
I'll go first. So we've watched a bunch of stuff. I mean, Only Murders in the Building is back, Connor. We're enjoying that. Me and my wife finally finished We Crashed, the WeWork, Jared Leto, Anne Hathaway thing on Apple TV+. But I got to give credit in these last 6 weeks or so since we spoke. I just finished it last night. The Orville, New Horizons.
I'm two back.
You're two back. I continue to be fascinated by this show's existence because we talked about it in previous shows. We talked about it in end of year things. I mean, before Paramount Plus and the Star Trek franchise kind of got back on its feet several years ago, The Orville was the best Star Trek show on TV that happened not to be Star Trek. But what it did was it started as like a comedic send up of Star Trek and then slowly evolved into
just Star Trek.
Seth MacFarlane living his Gene Roddenberry dream. And it's been years since the show was gone. It was on Fox and then now it jumped over to Hulu and stuff like that. So with the Orville New Horizons, not only is it back, the comedy has taken a backseat to just doing preachy Star Trek, like classic Roddenberry style messaging, kind of episodes with meaning. And also they just embrace the streaming nature and like running time. Screw that. Every episode is going to be an hour and 28 minutes.
Well, that's why we're behind you, because every time we sit down, we're like, you want to watch an Orville? We're like, oh, it's going to be an hour.
They're
and
so
half.
Long. And what's fascinating, so it was a 10 episode season and they just were like, and like, we're not talking like, and Josh, I know you don't watch the show, but you can appreciate this. We're not talking like they went from being a 50-minute show to an hour and 20-minute show and packed in more story. We're talking about like long sweeping shots of the exterior of the ship, right?
It's like Star Trek 1. It's like Star Trek 1.
Exactly. Or just like really long shuttle, a shuttle leaving the shuttle bay and landing on the planet for like 2 minutes.
I know. I told Megan, I was like, they can cut all this. This is why.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Teleporter was invented to cut all the scenes out.
My wife said the same thing. It's like, this show could use an editor. It's just like really like.
It's weird because Seth MacFarlane's still like in charge of it. He's the showrunner. Yeah.
He's the showrunner. He directed. He's the star. Yeah. Like this is his baby.
He writes most of the episodes.
So, Connor, not to spoil anything for you, but I will say stick with it and finish it, because what did feel very like, oh, God, get on with it, it's taking forever, looking back at the season, one of the kind of best crafted 10 episodes, I think, of their entire run, of every episode dropping a tidbit that tied into the greater tapestry of the story, callbacks to previous season episodes, left and right character development. Like at the end of the 10th episode, I was like, wow, I really feel satisfied in that I got a lot of Orville and it was really good.
Yeah, no, we've been really enjoying it. It's just a matter of time management. It's like we could watch two Sandmans in the course of one Orville.
Right. Right. Well, we stuck with it and we finished it. They did, I think it was like episode 6 or so, was like a great mind fuck of a time travel episode.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah. No,
good.
It's been like full on Next Generation. I mean, I haven't watched Brave New World? Strange New World? What's the new one?
Strange New Worlds. That's next. So we couldn't, I want to watch Strange New Worlds, but we can't watch it until we finish the Orville.
Right. Like I haven't watched it yet, but this is, right. I mean, the Orville is the best Star Trek show on TV.
It really is. That's not Star Trek. The other one.
But like, you know, really great. As you said, messagey Star Trek episodes, which is what Star Trek is known for, going back to the original 60s TV series.
Preachy and judgy and like, yeah. And it is truly the great mix
and
of the original.
Fucked up, too.
Yeah, and fucked up. It is true. It is a great mix of the original series and Next Generation style storytelling mashed into one.
That time travel one was fucked up. The robot one was fucked up when you find out how the robots came to be. Like, there's some messed up stuff.
Really good stuff. I mean, long-winded, but quality. So that's my pick for this time around.
I am gonna go ahead and talk about, let's see, I think I'm gonna do Blackbird. Blackbird's on Apple TV Plus. It is a Dennis Lehane written show, run 6-episode series. Dennis Lehane is obviously like a really well-known crime novelist, and he's written a bunch of great episodes of The Wire, you know, just some amazing books.
He's a Boston crime writer.
Yeah, which is kind of what I expected when I turned it on, because like the main character is Jimmy Keane, and I was like, okay, here we go. But it isn't that. There's no Boston at all.
Isn't it partially a true story?
Yes, it is. And they show pictures at the end, and it fucking freaks me out. So Taron Egerton?
Elton John.
Egerton.
Eddie the Eagle, as I call him.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, like, this dude never looks like the same person from shot to shot. It is the weirdest thing. He spends half the movie, like, depending on the angle, he kind of looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Bruce Willis in Looper. And then other times he looks like a different person. It's the weirdest thing. And he looks nothing like, you know, any of the other movies that you see him in. It's so weird, his ability to, like, be a chameleon. We're just like, who is this person? It's amazing. But he basically plays this guy who is arrested. He's a criminal. And when he is in jail, they give him an opportunity to get out because they need to get some sort of information or a confession from a serial killer of young girls, who's this crazy guy who's played by the guy who played Richard Jewell in the movie.
He's
Richard
terrific.
Jewell.
Terrific.
Oh, that guy.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he's good.
He was also in the Nancy Kerrigan movie.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He was
Galooly.
Not Galooly. Yeah, Galooly's friend.
He was Galooly's friend. Yep.
He stole that movie.
He did.
Paul Walter Hauser.
I finished the show last night or the night before. The acting job that dude did specifically is because he's so goofy and he has a weird face and look. And at one point, like, you see the evil guy and like the actor pulls him out of nowhere and it's amazing. Also, this is going to be the last role for Ray Liotta, who plays the haggard father of he's Big Jim Keane, not Jimmy Keane. You know, and he's like, his health is failing the entire time throughout the show, which is like the saddest thing because he looks like hell, but he's great in it. I mean, like, his sort of haggard, ragged voice, you know, like, can you imagine how many cigarettes that guy smoked? to sound like that. You know, and then you know, like the character sort of goes downhill health wise, and at the same time, I'm having a hard time going, well, he's really sick there. You know, like I don't know, but all of those sort of three main characters were incredibly compelling. There is one thing that is ridiculous, is that at one point he turns out that this guy is in prison with Vincent the Chinigante, and they introduce him, and it's I forget the actor's name. It's you can look it up at some point. But all of a sudden, like, they introduce him, like, the Chin is in this? And there's no real reason for him to be there. I think he was, he was mixed up in it in the real story. But if I was looking at plot-wise, there was just, like, here's a threat. We're never going to mention it again. But it was sort of out of the blue. Either way, really well shot. Greg Kinnear is one of the investigators. He's fantastic.
How long is the episodes?
They're, like, an hour. It's not like super long, so it's 6 1-hour episodes. Okay. But it's worth it. There was little bits of writing and acting that sort of went together, and I just thought, that is, like, you couldn't get away with this on most TV because it was just so smart. And it's hard for me to explain why, but there was like psychological manipulation kind of stuff that was happening that was really brilliant. And I was like, oh, that's because that's a novel writer. It's not like the best show I've ever watched. I expected something really amazing, but it's really, really good. And it's compelling, and it's great acting and writing.
Apple's very quietly putting together a strong
lineup. I'm telling you, there's no filler. Like, if you like one of the things, you're going to get quality out of it. They spent the money on it. For my money, you know, there's not a bunch of junk there. There's only these shows that we tried really hard to make good, and a bunch of them are.
I wasn't going to watch Severed, but everyone won't shut up about it, so.
Yeah, I know, yeah, and Severance is on the list. The problem with the Apple TV Plus stuff is just that we watched We Crashed on it, and it's like, I had a combination of just, like, I don't have motivation to go back into it to find more once you finish one. Like, I feel like the discovery experience in the app isn't, and maybe that's because there's not as much stuff, you know? But then at the same time, like, I knew Blackbird was out because Leota died, but other than that, I didn't hear anything about it. Like, it's the same Netflix problem, right? Severance seems to be the only thing I consistently hear people talking about.
I have a feeling Severance, that, like, other than a couple of the shows that become culty things, so your Ted Lasso's.
Well, yeah, obviously it's a big hit.
Mythic Quest,
yeah.
Right. But, like, the other, like, it almost feels
all right,
like
Mythic Quest is coming back.
They're so nichey that they're a little under the radar. But I don't.
It's just a fire hose problem.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's
and you have to have your algorithm work. Like, I went to go watch Sandman on Netflix, and apparently the algorithm thought I had no interest in it at all. I had to search for it to get the pop up on my screen. It wasn't even on my. It was the week it came out. It wasn't on new releases. It wasn't on featured. It wasn't on any of my.
Same thing here. Like, because we've been watching Russian Doll season 2 on Netflix, and I haven't got. When Sandman came out, I even know it was out until a couple of days after it was out. I was like, oh, it didn't even hit me on the.
I had a friend mention it. So, yeah. I mean, the thing I think with Apple TV Plus is that, like, if you hear about one of those things that you think you might like, it's probably a pretty safe choice. Like, they're not putting out garbage.
Right. Yeah, I've watched a lot on the series in the past year, on the platform in the past year. So yeah.
They're also like in business with Tom Hanks now, so that's good.
HBO's loss. Sorry, I just finished the book yesterday, the HBO book that so Connor good. Got me that took like years off my life in trying to finish. So, like, I'm all like, HBO, let's talk about it.
Cobra Kai season 4, I finished watching on Netflix.
Did I miss season 4? What happened in that?
Season 4 has hit the point where I didn't see the movies, so, like, it's dealing with the fallout from Karate Kid Part 3. Which I never saw.
With the ponytail guy.
With Terry Silver.
Yeah, this is the old season. It came out like around Christmas.
I didn't watch it at the time, so I just watched it.
Okay, got it. I thought a new season came out. I'm sorry.
No, it's coming out in a month. Which is great because I just finished 4. But it's not, you know, it's not as good of a show as it was in season 1, but it's still a really fun show and I still really like to watch it. I still think that the main guy, why is his name escaping
Zabka.
Me? Zabka deserves all the Emmy Awards still.
He's great.
He can still pull off the most ridiculous dialogue and make the character likable.
It is amazing.
It's still over the top and silly. And, like, I love the idea that everyone in the Valley cares about this karate tournament.
Right. Like, it's a big deal.
But it's fun. Like, I have a really good time watching it. And I'm always looking forward to the next episode. So I think that's a success in my book.
Yeah.
Reservation Dogs season 2 started up only a couple episodes into that. It's not quite as good as season 1. It's sort of got season 2 syndrome where they don't seem to know what to do with the characters at the moment. But they added Wes Studi and some other people. I'm enjoying because I like the actors a lot, but it doesn't seem like it's cohesive yet, which is only about 2 or 3 episodes into it. But the main thing I want to talk about is, you know, it's not a new idea, but the idea that streaming services do TV shows really well, but the movies just don't work. Over the past weekend, I watched both Prey and The Gray Man –
Everyone's been raving about Prey.
I enjoyed Prey. Yeah. There's things about it. It's not a streaming movie fault. It's just like, I was talking to our buddies Hank and Mike afterwards about it because, you know, I'm a big fan of that first Predator movie. It's a classic in my book. Sure. It's an 80s classic. And the limitations of the technology at the time made it a much more interesting movie. It's like the Jaws problem, right? You can't show the Predator all that much. When you do, he's a guy in a suit. But the guy in the suit was much more compelling than this like CGI Predator who can jump everywhere and do crazy things. And then when he cuts people up, there's fake blood flying everywhere. Just there's a remove from a CG character fighting people as opposed to a guy, you know, real people fighting. The movie was good. The main girl was good. They probably should have put it out in theaters. It was.
Yeah, I got to wonder if they're regretting that decision because of all the buzz it's been getting. It's like, I guess it's the highest performing movie released on Hulu ever, right?
Highest performing anything on Hulu.
Yeah.
If you like Predator, it was fun to watch. I enjoyed watching it. But I watched it back to back with The Gray Man, and I don't remember anything that happened in The Gray Man.
I've never even heard of that.
It just went one into my brain and went out again. Like, it was just so innocuous. It had a lot of people in it. Like, that's the only thing I remember about it was, like, more and more actors kept showing up that you know. But, like, it was just a lot of people shooting at each other or stabbing each other. And there was no real reason or to care about any of it.
Is that the Ryan Gosling one?
Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans and Ana de Armas and Billy Bob Thornton. And there's a bunch of other people that show up later on.
That did pop up, and Lindsay's like, we should watch that. And I was like, I feel like I don't want to watch it. Like, it just like didn't...
It's the Russo brothers.
Oh.
It was shot really well. The action scenes that I remember were interesting, but like, I don't remember the story. I don't remember why anyone was trying to kill each other other than Chris Evans' character was an asshole. You know, there's some funny things happen and they're all charming actors, but like, I don't know, man. It's just weird. It just didn't stick with me at all. Like, when I saw Bullet Train on the theaters, I loved Bullet Train. It was stupid and silly and funny.
Well, I mean, it goes back to, and I know the answer to this question, but if you went to go see Prey or The Gray Man in theaters, would that have enhanced your experience?
And it totally might have, you know?
Yeah.
I'm harder on Prey than I should be. Prey was fine. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was The Gray Man more that I was thinking of, where it was just like, everyone was talking about this huge movie that came out. I couldn't tell you the log line of this. I couldn't tell you the story.
Right.
It just was like, a lot of things blew up.
Do you think that that has something to do with the fact that, like, you're not bad about this, but if you're at the theater, you're engaged.
Well, that's what Ron just said.
Right, I know, but
not if you're doing a podcast, though, Connor.
No, obviously. I don't know. Well, no, I thought we were talking about the idea that, like, because we've talked about this before, like, they're just not exciting when they come out on TV because it's just on TV.
Right, yeah, exactly. And we talked about this on the show all the time. You just said that, Josh.
Yeah.
But, like, you're prone to distraction. You press pause to go get something. You're holding your phone. You know, like, one of the kids makes a noise.
You're more likely to get up and go to the bathroom.
Exactly.
Oh, for sure.
Exactly.
Like, I went up and made another drink. Like, it's not the same experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's harder in that sense.
You don't have that, like, I drove here. I paid for this.
Right.
I have to try to make it work, you know. Right. Like at any point when you're watching a thing at home, you can turn it off. I do it all the time. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just doing it.
The problem with doing that is it stays forever in your continue watching list. Just like, I don't want to watch that anymore.
It drives me crazy. Yeah.
Seven months ago. I'm not going to watch it. Anyway, Prey was fun, but it just felt a little bit removed from a CG standpoint. But Gray Man, I just was like, I don't understand. But anyway, it could have been my problem. I had like five Mai Tais.
I mean,
listen. It was reveling. I'm gonna watch movies and drink Mai Tais. So that was the stuff we watched the last 6 weeks or so. Things we've enjoyed. Let's move on now to the main event of this episode, the top five TV deaths. And I'm gonna let Josh explain. But first, I want to say these are really, really bad spoilers. So there's no way for us to delineate them. Meaning, we can't list characters in the show notes. We can't list shows in the show notes.
No, you got to tune in. You got to people have chosen to tune in to listen. They're going to listen. They're going to be entertained, right? And we're going to draw them in with the prospect of talking about our favorite deaths on TV shows.
My guess is a lot of these deaths happened a while ago.
That's with us. I'm guessing we're going to pick from
fairly. No, I've got some old ones on mine.
Right. Well, that's what I mean.
Right. But I think it's important before we get into this, Josh, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I feel like a well-executed TV death is a trope that is welcome and, when executed well, deserves a ton of respect.
Sure.
All right, wait, before you get
changes
that,
the game.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that we are going to introduce a series of top fives into our Media Explode rotation. We've chosen the first one, which is TV deaths, Deaths of characters Dex? On television. TV Dex.
Dex?
Yes. Deaths of television.
Oh, I did the wrong thing.
Television characters on programs we watched.
Yep.
Deaths.
And ascending order of, it's just, and it's like pick of the week. It's what.
So are we going to go around robin, like each one do our top, our five, then we do our four, then we do our three?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so we're doing that? Okay.
We're not, yeah, we'll see how it goes, and then we can use this format.
We can refine
it. Top five format, this championship vinyl format.
I do want to thank the patrons. We had our patron hangout last week, and they helped us pick out some top five topics. We threw out some ideas. They threw out some ideas in the chat room. We picked a bunch. This was the one we wanted to start with the most because we've been talking about doing it.
I think the preamble that Ron is getting into is sort of like, there's the comic book death, which is like, you won't believe what happens. It's shocking. It's whatever. There's the sort of like, you've known a character forever and it surprises you. Or there's the character where you've known it's coming and you have to wait for it and go through it all. And it's like, when you rank these, like I was doing it sort of how it affected me. Not right. Like that was entertaining, but it's like how much I actually felt for them as if they were real people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. I think it all wraps up in the same thing, right? Like it's entertaining from a appreciation of a story standpoint, but also like an emotional standpoint.
And as when we go through ours, I have like, there are different reasons why I find my deaths to be my favorite, you know, like because they have different effects on the show in different ways. And that's why I don't think like, you know, death with anything, dealing with loss and dealing with death, you know, like, you know, it comes, sometimes it comes from out of nowhere. Sometimes, you know, it's coming. Sometimes, you know, like you either, you know, are devastated by it or, you know, the person who deserves it gets it on the show or whatever it is. There are all these different kind of levers that can be pulled with it. That's why I think I find it so compelling. Yeah.
And if we were like horror movie fans, this would be a completely different thing.
Yeah. It is interesting how death has become on TV because you had a whole string of shows where death was like a feature.
Right.
You know, I think it started with like The Sopranos where people started assuming every week somebody was going to die.
Right.
And then it was like The Walking Dead and then like Game of Thrones. It became like who is going to die this week? And it almost became like a game where you lose the shock and emotional factor of it. Yeah. Like most of the deaths I have, save one, total surprises. You didn't go in expecting them when you turned the show on.
Yeah.
That makes it a very different experience than like, you know, Game of Thrones.
I almost made a no Game of Thrones, no Grey's Anatomy, no Walking Dead exception.
Well, if we want to make that rule, then I'll pull, because I actually had much
when I was researching, like I was like, Jesus, is anybody left alive on this show?
Yeah. But I'm for a generation. Yeah. So let's start, I guess, right? Anything else, Josh? You want to say anything? This is your
idea? I think we're good. We're
all right, so lay the ground rules, Josh. How's this going
to
work?
All right, let's go around five, descending to one. Connor, kick us off with your number five.
We're all going to do number five.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
And I think we're going to see crossover. Only because we all watch a lot of similar shows. But I'm curious. So my number five is, I struggled with this. I think I originally wrote down like 10 right off the bat.
I have another five right away, ready to go.
And then I was like, I thought about it, similar to what Ron said, like what was the one that really affected me emotionally at the time and that I still think about sometimes? And so I had to go number five, Lucy Knight on ER, season 6, episode 13. And strangely enough, a lot of the deaths happened in season 5 and 6.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was one of those ones where I remember distinctly watching it in college. I was living in LA in our apartment. We were all watching ER on Thursday night because that's what you did. And I remember by the end of it, I was standing next to the TV because we couldn't believe what was happening, where she, you know, a mentally ill David Krumholtz grabs a knife in act one and uses it in act three. Well, not really. There's a lot more acts in TV. It was so shocking. It shocked, you know, and then on top of Lucy, Carter being stabbed in the same attack in the hospital.
He became an asshole after that.
It changed the show a lot. I mean, Carter's character changed completely from the trauma and the drug addiction and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I can still picture Lucy's face on the floor looking at Carter and him looking at her. And it still gets me because we all liked Lucy. Lucy was really sweet and nice. And she was played by an actress whose name, why didn't I write the actress's name down?
Kelly
Preston. No, Kelly Taylor. Kelly Martin. Kelly Martin.
Lindsay and I literally call her Obladee. Because
we'd seen her on that show, and so she'd been around, and it was just so shocking and savage, and I just couldn't believe it. So that had to be in the top five for me.
It also features, I mean, like David Krumholtz is the most underappreciated actor that we have today. He's fantastic.
He's great
in everything, and in that role, he's amazing because you do not see that coming.
No,
man.
Ron.
I'm up. All right. Well, I'm probably going to go for my number five. I didn't look up. Do I have to look up like what season and episode they died in?
I didn't know.
Connor had it. Yeah. Okay.
I had
Jesus.
Some time before the show.
I remember being completely shocked by the suicide of Lane Price on Mad Men.
Oh, mm-hmm. Good one.
Yeah. He's on my alternates.
Okay, yeah. I remember, you know, like watching him slowly go down the drain in terms of like the pressure and like everything that was kind of going on and all the stress of Sterling Cooper, Draper Price, and then to have it happen, you know, the way it did in The Office and all that sort of stuff. Just yeah, it was
It was so like you just were watching his life fall apart. He wasn't even supposed to be there.
Yeah.
He didn't want to go.
Exactly.
He tried to make a go of it. You know, St. John was mean to him.
And we all loved him, too. He was so nice, and he really wasn't as sort of, I don't want to say evil as the other guys, right. But like just not as bad of a person as the other guys in the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the money is just like it's just so and that's the thing. It's like he didn't want to be there, but then he got seduced by the lifestyle, and he could be Don, and he could be Roger, right? Like, and kind of tried to be one of them, and it was exciting, and it was right. You know, and New York and all that sort of stuff. But then
that was a jump up TV moment.
Yes,
you know, like you.
Yep.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, that was well done. It was very good. Yeah.
All right, I am going to go. With I'm having a last moment thing here, but I'm gonna go with Rocket Romano from ER.
Wow,
that is one of those cathartic ones because he's so awful for so long, so awful.
That's not the arm though, right? He survived the arm.
No, that's the first helicopter accident.
Right,
the second helicopter accident is when it falls on him, and he in my mind he said not again, but he didn't really do that. But. So this last time that I was watching through it, like I knew it was coming, but I really didn't know when. And so after he gets his arm cut off, like he just gets worse and worse. And you're because it's TV, you're kind of waiting for a character to be redeemed in some way. And it just never happens. I was like, I can't believe a character this just irredeemable is on TV for this long. He's not evil. He's just a shithead.
Yeah.
Right.
Like when he goes down. No one feels bad about it. Like they have a memorial service for him and no one wants to speak because no one likes him. It's so interesting for TV, but he still was a nuanced character, an interesting character. But to drop a helicopter on him after a helicopter cut his arms off, that's just like to make that work. That's really something. Yep.
You know, thinking back to Lucy's death, that was his like one real moment of not redemption even, but that he had a heart was when he couldn't save her and he like, you know, tossed the instruments against the wall. Like that was his one moment of, oh, he's got a heart in there somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was an asshole.
I liked him. I love him though.
Oh yeah. I enjoyed him. He was an entertaining.
He was entertaining. It was definitely entertaining. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My fourth one is a tough one because it's the death of Bill McNeil on News Radio.
Ooh.
Season 5, episode 1.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Which was aired 4 months after the actual death of Phil Hartman, who was murdered by his ex-wife wife at the time. You know, when I looked up a bunch of lists just to kickstart anything, I'd forgotten it online about, you know, TV deaths. And I was reading the Decider article about this. They said it was like watching a funeral. That's basically what it was. I remember also watching it in LA, I think. And, you know, the cast is like losing it throughout the entire episode. I mean, it's not even about the death. It's not, you know, he's not in it. He's dead. It's not even about his death. It's about the fallout of his death. Up to the very end where they're reading these letters that he wrote to each person on the event of his death. And you can see each one of the cast just weeping in it.
Yeah, that's bad. That's rough.
I often think about that episode a lot, too, because of the true emotion in it. And that they were able to turn that into something very moving. I mean, that's something where the show never recovered from.
No.
It was still a solid show. And they brought John Lovitz on, who was his friend, and to sort of take his place. But it was never the same show after that.
Yeah.
I don't know, way back at the beginning of the pandemic, I bought the DVDs and we watched through 3 or 4 seasons and I've actually never seen that. And I didn't really know, again, I didn't really know when it was going to happen. I knew it was coming at some point and I think I was really close, but I kind of didn't want to. Because like,
it's hard to watch.
This show without him would be, but it's got to be cathartic for everybody.
Yeah.
Ugh. That, you know, like that is, I mean, if you're going to talk about like celebrity deaths, that one haunts me. Because it's just so wrong, and he was just so
good.
Who does Phil Hartman remind you of? No one. He's a singular
He's truly a character. He's truly a character. Yep.
Conan O'Brien said that like he literally always walked around talking like that too. He's like, I don't know a thing about him. I've been around him like he was entirely enigmatic. He's like, you get up in the morning, let's go, and he'd walk away. Just
yeah,
strangest thing.
It's a good episode though, Josh. If you've never watched it, it's
I will.
It's
I'll
good.
Get to
it's
it.
It's a good episode, and it ends on a funny joke. It's a good episode.
It's a funny show.
Yep.
My number four is the death of Toni Morchette, played by Rebecca Gayhart on Beverly Hills 90210.
This leads me to a question I can't ask, but I'll know at the end.
What do you mean?
It's okay. Well, I'll let you know at the end. You've surprised me, but not.
So for those who don't know, this is in season six of Beverly Hills 90210. Dylan's father was in some sketchy dealings. Many seasons were spent of Dylan trying to find out who had his father killed. And in doing that, he discovered that it was this real, real nefarious guy, Anthony Morchette. And in trying to investigate Anthony Morchette, he discovered that Anthony Morchette had a daughter, Antonia Morchette, Toni Morchette. And sure enough, Dylan and Toni fell in love. And so what you then had is you see Dylan coming out of the darkness of the shadow of his father and the shadow of his father's, kind of missteps and his father's death. And even though he was like on a path of revenge, love was going to set him free. And it became very much Romeo and Juliet in 90210 world where, right, where the bad guy's bodyguard found out about Toni and Dylan and it was a secret and they were going to run away together. But then the bad guy, Morchette, found out and sent someone to kill Dylan. And it's a rainy, rainy day and the cars stop and then the guns happen or whatever. But no, it was Toni driving Dylan's car.
Oh no, the irony.
Yeah, and I will never, and it was like, oh man, can this guy just not catch a break? And just the shot of Dylan holding Tony's dead body in the pouring rain next to his, classic Porsche, going screaming, no, became, kind of iconic death of 90210.
What happened to the Porsche?
Dylan still drove it.
Okay.
No, I think he put it like into storage. Like it went away. Like he couldn't drive it. Like that sort of thing.
Right. Lindsay said that one of your lists would be Dylan's father.
Oh, no. She was close.
Didn't she fall into disrepute because she ran over somebody with her car?
Yes, she did.
Fascinating.
Who, Rebecca Gayhart?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. She was up and coming, and then she backed over somebody.
Yeah. My wife just texted me funny, because I guess she's listening outside the...
What season was it?
Season six.
How soon after did he leave the show?
So this was November 1995. He left the show after that season. Basically, this was his exit ramp.
Yeah.
And then he came back.
We're definitely not getting to the second topic today.
Then he came then he came back to in season nine, addicted to heroin.
Oh, boy.
But yeah.
Sounds goofy, but time-wise, I'm like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. That's a thing that somebody in that position would do.
Brandon, they killed her. They killed my baby. So, there you go.
Josh, number four.
I am going to go with Bodhi from The Wire. A lot of people died in The Wire. But late in season, I think it's in five, we had gotten to know this kid, Bodhi, who's one of the hoppers from the street and he becomes one of the drug lords or whatever. But because the show had this even-handed thing where you realize that people are just kind of products of their environment, doing what they have to do to survive in it. So at the beginning, Bodhi, like he killed Wallace, which is like one of the worst things. That's the other, like there's a bunch of deaths on that show. And that was shocking and everything. But Bodhi, like... he did one of those things that my favorite kind of TV has somebody actually develop and grow up. And he grew up in this world that he lives in, and he wasn't necessarily a respectable person. But there's a scene just before that where Bodhi comes out. There's a scene early on where Herc and Carver arrest him, and they all are, like, they're beating him up, and then they start playing pool, and they grow this, like, grudging respect for each other.
Yeah, they have, like, lunch together.
Yeah, well, by the end of the season, McNulty comes to pick him up as he's coming out of jail. And they go and they have lunch together and they just talk, almost like peers.
They're work colleagues.
In the cartoon when like the cat and the mouse like check out and then they go have coffee together.
Mm.
You know,
like, oh, I love those. I love that. Like when they punch the clock. Right.
Right. And like you get this sense like, oh, this kid grew up in these really hard circumstances and it's just a very complex character. And then he's killed on the corner like right after that. And it's such a dumb thing. And what's happening is that Bodhi's whole, all the gangs are changing and shit. So he's like this one guy left on a corner and he's like, I'm going to stand here. And he gets shot down, but he gets shot down for nothing. But to him, it was about honor. And then, you know, they cut to McNulty, like sitting in a park, like thinking about him. And it affected me in a way that I did not expect. And it happens every time I watch that show. There are 10 other characters on that show I could have written that about, but that was the one that sort of came to me that I decided to go with.
Is that your only Wire one?
Yeah. But I could do 5 Wire ones.
Not Wallace.
Wallace is early on. You don't know him so well. So given the fact that you get to know a character and just sort of the turnaround and the irony of you're actually getting to the point where you care about what happens to this person, I think makes it more impactful for me.
Number 3 was, the most recent one in an era which it's hard to keep things secret. And therefore, the death of Will Gardner in season 5 of The Good Wife was a shocker. In a list full of shocking deaths, probably the most shocking death, because it happens in the middle of the season, towards the end of the season, like probably 2/3 of the way through the season. It wasn't promoted. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't hinted at.
They did such a good job of hiding this one. Yeah.
He was one of the main 3 characters on the show for this all, you know, this 5-season show. He's a lawyer and he's murdered in the courtroom. Just completely shockingly. And I just remember sitting on the couch with my mouth hanging open, just sort of like, this can't be happening. Surely this is not actually happening. It wasn't like a season finale. It wasn't like a season premiere. It wasn't like sweeps. It was just like this random episode. One of the main characters randomly gets murdered. And it was just...
And changed the course of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, for the better. It was a 90-degree turn, you know, because the thing was is that if you watch The Good Wife, Julia Margulies played, Alicia Florrick, and she was married to the governor who turned out was impropriety, went to prison and like all this sort of stuff. But Will was her college, you know, will they, won't they, sweetheart type,
yeah.
Found her, you know, being reunited with him in later in life. And it was like, you were just waiting for them to happen. But, you know, Connor, what happens when they get together? Like the show's not interesting anymore.
Right.
So how do you mix it up, right? And this was a tragic way of mixing it up.
He wanted off the show, but also...
Right. Which helps, but...
It helps, but if he's the one character that you pull out that affects every other main character.
Yep. He was a tie. He was a connection to... Yeah.
Right. You could pull Diane out and she's not going to affect Alicia's character as much as, you know, but you pull Will out, suddenly every main character's life is now changed.
Yep.
And it was very powerful and shocking and sad. And I don't remember the last time I was that surprised by something that happened on a show, at least, you know, in the network era that, you know, didn't get leaked out. It was pretty amazing they did that.
Yeah. So this was on my list and I pulled it out at the last minute because I knew you were going to have it. Right. Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, the 6 to 10 list, this is like number 6 for me because it was such a moment on that show that just totally changed it.
Yep.
I have a number 6 that is just killing me here.
Yeah. So what's your number 3, Ron?
My number 3 would be Gary Shepard on 30-something.
Ooh.
So if you watch 30-something back in 1988 to 1991.
So if you're Ron or 60.
Basically, the whole premise of the show was it followed, 7 friends who were in their 30s, right? And 2 of them were couples with kids, and 3 of them were kind of hopeless single types, and, you know, a career type and an artsy type or whatever. And Gary was really, he was kind of the on again, off again with the artsy type with Melissa. But, you know, he was the best friend of the main character, Ken Olin. And he was, you know, kind of longer hair, you know, kind of, you know, this is the late 80s, so like, you know, reminiscent back to protests of the 70s and things like that. And, you know, he's a professor and we get to know him and that sort of thing. And a lot of his definition was through the dysfunction of his relationship with Melissa, who was Michael, the main character's cousin, you know, will they, won't they, whatever. But then Gary met another woman and they had a kid and he became a stay-at-home dad. And like, it was kind of like a life turning things around. And then Gary was on his way to visit their friend who had cancer in the hospital to bring her book and died in a car accident. And just completely out of nowhere, don't see it coming. And then it proceeded to affect everybody on the show for the rest of the show. And whether you like it or not, they had him come back as a ghost, you know, like in terms of like in the characters' heads. But it was a very, and at least for me at a young impressionable age of 12, watching this, it really kind of imprinted the wrestling with grief and how you deal with the loss of someone that you don't know is coming. really well done. I mean, this is, you know, Edward Zwick and Marshall Herskovitz, you know, who kind of like set the template for the late 80s hour-long drama. And My So-Called Life came out of this grouping, and Brothers and Sisters, whatever that's like. There's a through line in ABC dramas from Zwick and Herskovitz, and the show won a bunch of Emmys and stuff like that. But this is just an example of just how good the show was.
Yeah.
Have you seen it since then? Like, if you watched, like, that episode?
A couple of times, not recently, but it definitely did stick with me. Like, I remember shots from it and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't really revisit TV as much as you do, Josh.
No, I know that.
But yeah. Once and Again, that's the show that it was related to.
I remember. I watched that show.
My number three is Dolores Landingham from The West Wing.
Oh, good one.
She's on my 6 of 10.
It's one of those things where sort of a minor character, and I'm trying to remember what the name of the episode was, the two cathedrals?
16th and... Cathedrals. No. The one she died was the street she died on. It was 16th and something.
Right. And so she went to go pick up her new car, and Charlie was teasing her that she should have got the tow package, and she didn't, but she was so happy she was going to get a new car. And she'd been through it. She lost two sons in Vietnam, and she was just this motherly constant.
Yep.
Motherly is almost not exactly right, but she filled in a
matriarchy, matriarch-esque.
Yeah, and she just, you know, she was Alfred. She was President Bartlett's Alfred,
yep.
and we had seen the past. I don't know if we'd actually seen that episode yet. I think so. We'd done flashbacks, and she'd known him since he was a kid. And it just, like, if you'd have told me, like, hey, in this episode, Mrs. Landingham's going to die, and I you know, would have been like, all right, no big deal. But, man, the way that they played it, like, it is crushing. And that probably has a lot to do with the reactions of, you know, Bartlett and of Charlie and all the people around. But they're just shocked by it, and then it leads to... Bartlett ends up doing that thing where he's in the church and he's yelling it, you know, like, what do you want from me? Which should be super, super stupid.
Yelling at God in Latin.
Yeah.
Two Cathedrals was the next episode. That's one.
Yeah, Two Cathedrals is the one that I'm thinking of that sort of is the what happens right after. But just the way that came about, and I just remember, like, it sucked the air out of me, and I didn't
know it was a brilliant piece of writing, because that whole sequence of her being excited for the car was the comedic relief in that episode that went through the entire episode. Like, every time we went to her, it was another joke about her buying the car. And then, you know, the stinger is she died, and Charlie tells everybody, and his face dropping when he gets the phone call. Yeah. You just weren't expecting it, and they just kicked you in the gut with it.
And everybody, all the characters who you love, their reaction to it, like, amped it up a ton.
Right.
Such a surprising thing, and it just how it stuck with me all that time, so...
Well, I'm glad that, Josh, you did not institute the no Grey's Anatomy rule, because my number two is George O'Malley, season 6, episode 5. So that's the second season 6 one. We've had 2 season 6, 2 season 5s on my list.
I mean, technically, you just pick any character from...
Well, that's the one I think about, because I just remember the claustrophobic feeling of helplessness in that episode of, you know, this guy who was helping someone on the street. I'm trying to remember the details because it was 25 years ago. This guy helping someone on the street gets hit by a bus, and he's all mangled. His face is ruined. So they've been working on him the whole episode, trying desperately to save him, and he keeps trying to communicate with them, but he can't. The whole time they're talking about George and reminding us that his nickname was 007 because people are constantly dying because he had a license to kill.
Oh, man.
You know, so he ends up writing out 007 on, it was Meredith's hand, right?
Yeah.
And I just remember her saying, oh, my God, it's George. And I remember, like, gasping all of the air out of my lungs in the gasp that I made.
So not to take anything away from that moment, because I did watch and that was the same thing. But, you know, I know ER is a big through thing. ER pulled this 10 years before this happened with Gant.
Yes.
When Gant, you know, threw himself in front of the train and comes in all mangled, and they're working on him, and Benton is yelling, well, someone page Gant, and then all of a sudden a beeper is going off, and it's Gant's beeper on his body that they're working on. It was like, oh, it's Gant! So, it's definitely the ER jump scare, right?
I think the difference is that, and I actually had watched Grey's Anatomy at this point, Gant wasn't actually around that long.
Right, and O'Malley was a heart of the show.
He was an OG cast member.
Yeah.
You didn't... by the time you started to know who Gant was, he was gone. Like, right. And, you know, he was kind of sad.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have had the same... Same move. There's a terrible part in ER where you can tell that Grey's Anatomy is on the air and they're trying to catch up and do stuff like them.
Yep.
They start with music at the end of the episode. It's like, what the fuck is this? Change this. Yeah. It's terrible.
That's the one. I mean, lots of people died, and I've got another Grays one in my 6 to 10 list.
I moved my Grays to my 6 to 10 list because I grouped them like Star Wars, where you asked me what my favorite movie is, and I have to choose the original trilogy just like all together, right? Yeah. And so like George O'Malley, obviously Derek, Denny, you know, just like it's
Denny's
almost
in my 6 to 10.
Yeah, Denny.
I almost
Denny
put
was
Denny
brutal.
On it, and I didn't remember what it was, but I was like, I remember that was fucked up.
Yeah, Denny
it's
was
the only
brutal.
Star-making one of all these deaths. He became a star after that.
He's died on many shows.
Yeah. That was his thing for a while. Is he would go on shows and die. He died on Weeds.
He just was so charming. Connor, do you remember all the rings?
Yes, I do.
When we interviewed him when he was in the Watchmen movie and on the press line.
He died. First thing in that movie.
Exactly, yeah. And he just steps up and he's got like full
so charming
Arizona cowboy gear with like lots of rings and was just so nice and so charming. Like that was great.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan sucked you into his universe and you stayed there until he left. Like it was just like Ron and I basically were floating off the ground when we talked because he was that charming. He's like, oh, this is how a star is.
Yep.
Anyway, George was my number two. Ron?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, my number two is similar, and I'm sorry, Josh, or you, if I pull it away from you, but my number two is in the same vein of hospital drama, but I can't even talk about the passing of Mark Green on ER. I can't talk about it. Like, even though he wasn't even on the show at the time. Like that's
what I will when it comes around to me.
Like that's what I think is so powerful about it and shows just how great Anthony Edwards' character on ER was that he wasn't even on the show, and we find out he passed from a letter, and I can't talk about it. It just breaks my heart.
He puts it up on the board. Yeah. I'll get to it. My number two is Gordon Clark from Halt and Catch Fire.
That's on my 6 to 10 list too.
It's the one I think of, basically, after Mark Green. The thing about Halt and Catch Fire was, and at this point I'm like, did anybody watch this? Was it just us three? You know, but it had the best character development. There's about 7 or 8 episodes into the first season. They figured out who these people were and what they were going to do. And from that point on, that show was full steam ahead.
Yep.
And if you've ever tried to watch it and you're like, I watched like half the first season, like you didn't quite get there. When they go to Comdex, it locks, and then everybody gets nuanced, and it's wonderful.
I think I skipped a season, or I don't remember. Continue.
I think you didn't watch the first season.
No, I did watch first season, and I was like, this is not good, and then Ron convinced me to watch season two.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
And you're fine from there.
Yeah.
The point being, like, this is the same thing I was sort of mentioning earlier, like with The Wire, is that this show skips time, and so by the time you get to the last season, you know, it's 20-something years later, and everybody's gone through their lives. So Donna and Gordon have broken up. He's been through a bunch of stuff, but he'd had this neurological disorder that's sort of been coming along, you know, in the background for a while, and he wasn't talking about it. And he'd been through some shit, and it felt like he finally got stuff together, and then he's gone, and there's this really sad... I don't remember the death as much as I remember when they're in his house afterwards packing up.
Yeah.
And, oh, Christ, what's his name? The Texan.
Joe.
Not Joe.
What was his name? Yeah. He was on Pete and Pete. Boz. John Bosworth. Boz. Toby Huss. It was Bez for the Happy Mondays.
So Boz.
He started dancing.
Boz. And he saw Ben from the Mighty Boz Stones. He was like, hey. Boz is, he's trying to, what's the girl's name? I can't think of the girl's name. The blonde girl.
Oh my God,
girl.
Josh, you're killing us.
No, it's not the point, but he tells her, he's like, have some chili.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't want any chili. He's like, I think you should have some chili.
Cameron.
And it's just
Cameron.
Like, Cameron. Yeah, I knew it was a C. And it's just this other sweet moment. But it was so, like, I cried.
Yeah.
Like, when that happened. I just didn't expect it to come, and I didn't expect it to affect me so much. But those characters were so good. Those are, like, my favorite. That's, like, the best character development I've ever seen on a TV show over the course of time.
Both of those guys are writing on Paper Girls.
Yeah.
And Cantwell is writing for Marvel too. He's writing Iron Man and
But that Gordon Clark, that killed me. When I watched it again at some point, and it was just as bad. It was almost worse because you know you really get to know them.
Ron, I'm gonna have you do your number one first.
Okay. Well, my number one is a little unconventional, but is a death that impacted the entire direction of the show, and it's Laura Palmer on Twin Peaks.
That is very unconventional.
You didn't even meet her. All you had was a photograph of her as a prom queen, and the entire mystery is all tied to her death and the death carries through the entire show. And it's through the journey of the first two seasons and the prequel movie, Fire Walk With Me, that you then learn about her. And also, of course, reading her diary, right, which was published in book format.
It's dirty.
It was a TV show death of a character you never met, but you met through the world that she built in the town, in the small town, and everyone that she knew. I think it spoke to the concept of a death in a TV show as the basis for drama and building from there, you know. So it you know, definitely impacted me. You know, I was in eighth grade when it came on, and just the idea of storytelling and David Lynch and Mark Frost, what they did with it, and just, you know, launched one of my favorite franchises, whatever you want, in terms of media properties. But the death of Laura Palmer is one. Whenever I think of TV death, that's, you know, it, you know, who killed Laura Palmer was a mystery for the country for an entire year. Everybody was enthralled in it.
I thought about several Twin Peaks characters, and I had to eliminate all of them because I couldn't deal with it.
Right. Well,
it was just too. I mean, her actual death in the film is fucking crazy.
Yeah,
but
brutal.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I thought about Maddie for a minute, and I was like, no, I can't even think about that.
Yeah.
Without losing a night's sleep, so I took it off. Yeah. Josh, I'm gonna count down 3, 2, 1, and you and I are gonna say our number ones together. Ready?
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Mark Green.
I can't talk about it. Stop.
I'm going to let you, Josh, because you just rewatched the show, so the details are fresh in your mind. But I'll just say that this is a character death that we constantly reference with the three of us, and is guaranteed, if we send each other a YouTube clip from that episode, to have the other person yell at them for being an asshole, for ruining their day. I've got goosebumps on my arm just thinking about it right now. So, Josh, you just recently rewatched ER. Why don't you talk about it?
You know, Mark Green is the character who's on at the very beginning. He is the one who, quote-unquote, sets the tone, as Morgenstern tells him, and then he later passes that on. And, like, he's guileless. He's this good guy. For whatever reason, they chose somebody who's kind of an average-looking person. He is competent at his job. You know, you watch him sort of grow up over it. He got married young, so he had a kid, and he had all these things, and then stuff just kept going wrong for him. And you know, it starts off at some point in the first, maybe second season, he gets a shit beat out of him in the bathroom.
Oh, that was brutal.
He has to deal with that for a really long time. And every time they go back to that bathroom for the rest of the series, I'm like, get out of there. And then, you know, he breaks up with his wife, he has all these problems with his daughter, he finds love a second time, and he finds out he has a brain tumor, and they cure it. And you're like, awesome, we're good to go. And then he's in the hospital one day, and he has some more aphasia. He can't say the words, and he just accepts it. He's like, I'm done. You know, like, he understands it. And it like, that's how he walks out of the hospital.
Well,
and
it's the episode before where the little girl, you were my very last patient. Mm-hmm. And then talking about of his days, like, he just says, you're my very last patient. And you're not expecting it. You're just like, wait, what? What's happening?
Right, exactly. Like, it wasn't like a plan. It just happened. Yeah. He walks out. And then the premise of when he is sort of ending is that I can't talk about this. He goes to Hawaii with his daughter, and she's having all these problems. And she's acting out, and she's doing drugs, and she's sleeping or whatever. And he makes a list of things that he has to do. And, like, number one is fix Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, like, he's trying to help her, and she's still pushing him away at certain points because she's sad or whatever. And then he's married to Dr. Corday, and she comes out, and they have a new baby.
The real brilliance of it was that they flipped it. They didn't do the Hawaiian episode and then the episode in the ER.
Right.
They did the ER episode where his friends and family finds out that he dies.
Right.
And then we go back to Hawaii.
Carter reads the letter to them.
Yep.
Oh, my God. I can still see him when his face changes and he swallows. And
why are you doing this to me? Why are you guys doing this to me?
It's faxed in.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
it was faxed in. Yeah.
Corday sent it.
Yeah.
And then he pins it to the bulletin board.
They stick it to the bulletin board, and then you see other characters who weren't for the reading out, and it's like crushes you all over again, and it crushes you all over again. The only sad thing was, you know, the limits of actual life and TV was when they had his funeral later on. It was like they didn't have any of the original cast, was none of them were there.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm pretty sure that dog would have flown in for it.
For me, it all goes back to, I mean, it's that last time he's leaving the hospital when he tells Carter, you set the tone, right? Which is just like, which is so, so great. And then it's that scene, you know, where, you know, Carter's reading the letter, and it's just the choked up moment. And it just kills me. It just, even, you know, thinking about it kills me. He was such a good person.
Yeah, and you go to Hawaii and you see, like, he's sure of himself in a way that he hasn't been. Like, he's like, he figured everything out at the last moment. And, you know, he's spending time with his daughter and it starts to go bad a little bit. And he's just sort of learning to appreciate. And he's on like a deck, you know, and you hear the music, which is the Hawaiian version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You can look it up. That guy's dead too. Which I can't hear that song anywhere in the world without being like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's bad. Yeah.
It's so terrible. And he's got that big patch on his eye. You know, but it's also like, it's sweet. He got to sort of, he did kind of go out on his own terms.
Oh, for sure.
Like and before that, he's like, they were like, well, we can take you back. And because he found this like miracle surgery, you know, with I can picture the doctor, you know, he's like, well, I know what I'm doing. Nobody else can do this. And you're like, wow, this is some TV shit. And it fails. And then he goes back to meet with that doctor. And he's like, nothing I can do. It's so evil.
I mean, we should all be so lucky to go sitting on a chair in the Hawaii.
Yeah, I know. Of all ways to go, like, right? Yeah.
Ugh, God, Josh.
But he got a baby daughter he never even, like, really got to know or spend time with. And
oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, it's brutal.
So those were the top five TV deaths.
Wait, I don't want to go through a whole conversation, but let's do some notable mentions.
Okay.
Like, what were you upset about not being able to put in your top five?
Captain Cold on Legends of Tomorrow.
Huh.
Ooh, good one.
I always thought Len Snart, he was such a great character on The Flash, and he went over to Legends, and he was great, and he sacrificed himself in the finale of one season, and the way comic book shows are, I was convinced he was going to come back. And they brought the actor back in different, you know, kind of incarnations here and there, but they never brought Len Snart back. And it just,
the multiverse brought him back, but not the original.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, I was certain he was going to come back somehow, but he never did.
I mean, Mrs. Landingham, we mentioned Wallace, we mentioned Denny Duquette, we mentioned one of them I put down, I wasn't sure. But I still think it's a good one, is Lady Sybil and Downton Abbey.
I was wondering if you had, I saw Matthew Crawley and I was like, and then I saw Sybil, I was like, all right. That was unexpected. And she
Sybil's was like, all, again, kind of like George, where you're just like, wait, no, stop. Someone stop this. And, you know, that stupid doctor couldn't stop shit.
He's a
he came
doctor.
Out on the most recent movie, and I hissed at the screen because he let Sybil die. I thought, you know, Ron, I thought for a second about putting Sam Beckett, but he didn't actually die.
No, he's just lost in time.
But he never came home, so he's some point he dies. But
Marissa Cooper on the OC. That was shocking.
Also about Coach on Cheers. That's another Bill McNeil situation where the actor died.
I had Adriana Lacerva at number five, and I still think it's the most affecting of the Sopranos deaths because, I don't know, you think of Syl one way, and then you see him, like, yanking her out of the car by the hair.
He ain't so funny no more.
Oh, it's terrible. One thing came up, Connor, you'll remember this one, is Curtis Lemansky from The Shield. That's a grim way to go.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
He threw the grenade in the car, blew him up, and he was still alive for a while.
Interestingly enough, Peter Horton played Gary
Peter
Shepard.
Peter Horton, right? Yep.
He and Ken Olin both turned into TV directors, and Peter Horton directed episodes of The Shield, Josh.
Yeah. It's pretty surprising that nobody mentioned Nate Fisher.
I wrestled with that. He'd probably be in my 10 to 15 list. But the thing was, everyone died on that show. Yeah. And the show was about death, right? And so, like, it was less shocking when Nate Fisher died rather than when he got sick and dealing with that. But it was, I did think about it.
The way that he died.
Yeah.
Narm.
Yeah, Narm.
There's lots of deaths on Lost. I mean, it's I wouldn't say it's an easy thing to do, but we spend so much time with these characters, so something happens to them, and it affects us much more than, like, a movie death or something, just because we've spent hours and hours with them in our living room, as we like to say.
Brutal.
Ooh, all right. Well, what's really funny, though, is that we thought we would need a second topic.
I know. We were worried that we were going to blow through this too fast.
We have a second topic all ready to go, and we don't need it. And we have an email we don't need either.
Oh, well.
We'll do those another time. We'll do top five, you know, recurringly. But next month, we're going to come back with our other recurring segment, which is Old Men and Old Movies, and we're going to review The Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, we're doing that. We decided that?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Cool. I'm in.
The Poseidon Adventure, if you want to play along at home, is currently for rent on Apple and Amazon, so you can watch those before our next thrilling adventure. So that's the episode for the month. Thank you for all those who listened. Thanks for the patrons who unlocked it at patreon.com/ifanboy. Thanks to Josh and Ron. We do our regular iFanboy Pick of the Week show every week, where Josh and I and special guests talk about comic books. We do our Booksplode and Talksplode shows. Ron does All About Android. We have all kinds of things going on, and we have a lot of fun. Any final words?
Just, you know, just have a good time all the time.
That's a movie that would have been in my top one was Eric Stubbe K.
All right, so until next month, in which we review the Poseidon Adventure, my name is Connor.
I'm Ron.
That makes me Josh. Thanks, everyone.
Ooh, someday you wish upon a star. Wake up where the clouds are far behind. Be where trouble melts like lemon drops. High above the chimney top, that's where you find me, oh, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it. You know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.